flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, we did the four best offensive plays for the Texans. I put it up on a poll. We played the play-by-play from Mark Vandermeer. The poll is up on my Twitter timeline, at Sean T. Pendergast. I'm not going to say who's winning because I don't want to poison the results. There's four plays up there. Nico Collins, 3rd-and-11 catch to help close out the Colts, which is an amazing throw and catch in week one. The Daria Gumbawale touchdown to win the game against the Jags in week four. Damian Pierce shot out of a cannon, which led to Seth and I visualizing him getting actually shot out of a real cannon on the show earlier for 92 yards.
Or if not a real cannon, one of those circus cannons.
Circus cannon. A real circus cannon. Yeah. That's in week 18. That's number three. And then the Xavier Hutchinson catch off of the C.J. Stroud fumble scramble in the playoff game is number four. You can go vote on our... On my Twitter timeline, at Sean C. Pendergast. You can follow the station at Sports Radio 610 and follow Seth at Seth C. Payne. So top four defensive plays now. Let's get to these. There's a lot to choose from. That's why I said it was really difficult earlier, because there's a lot to choose from. I'm going to go with, these are the four I picked, and there's so many. There's so many from Danielle Hunter that you can pick. But I thought this one was very important in the game that was in, even though it was against an opponent that was not very good. This is Danielle Hunter strip sack fumble early in the second half against the New England Patriots.
May gets the snap. He's got a little time, and now he's sacked. The ball is out. Hunter got it out, and Edwards recovers at the 10-yard line. Strip sack.
Drake May is still down.
All right, so that, yeah, there's a lot going on that play.
Sorry about it, Drake May.
Yeah, Drake May still down. That was a big play because if you remember that game, I know the game wound up lopsided 41-21. It was 14-7 at the half, and the Patriots had just scored on a deep shot to Kayshon Boutte right before the half. He beat Derek Stingley. And they had the ball to come out in the second half. And if you're trying, you're just coming off that Buffalo win the week before, you're on the road against a much lesser opponent. And it looked like there was some letdown there with the Texans potentially. That play right there recalibrated the game, because just a couple plays later, the Texans scored to make it 21-7, and then the game was never really close. Danielle Hunter needed to be represented somewhere in this piece here, Seth, I felt like.
Yeah, that play, by the way, also, if that were versus the Chiefs, 100%. Pat Mahomes would have drawn a flag on it. There was almost incidental contact, almost, with Danielle Hunter to Drake May. So, yeah.
Oh, that's like a helmet.
Yeah, helmet to helmet. Yeah. I can't stop getting triggered about some of these calls. The thing that bothers me about the quarterback hit rules is that if you hit the quarterback in the midsection, anatomically, yeah, the midsection starts to go, the quarterback head kind of snaps, and it looks like it could have gotten hit by a helmet.
Yeah.
That's where it's like, you can't have your helmet anywhere near his helmet.
Yeah.
Like, not even on the same horizontal plane. So thank God. I was just glad that for Danielle Hunter's sack total sake, that was against Drake May in his first start.
Hey, by the way, did you, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, I mentioned We'll get to the other three plays, I promise. CJ Stroud turned down the Pro Bowl. You know how you know how deep they got into alternates for quarterback for the Pro Bowl for the AFC? Drake May is going to the Pro Bowl.
Wow.
Drake May, nobody wants any of that. And Russell Wilson are going to the Pro Bowl for the AFC. Drake May and Russell Wilson.
For Russell Wilson.
Jeez. Both those guys are in competitions coming into the year for their positions.
I know.
Russell
Wilson fell apart down the stretch.
Yeah, he did. He did. J.J. Watt tweeted yesterday. He said, you get five alternates deep, you may as well just call it the Participation Bowl.
Hey, whatever, J.J. I'm sitting here waiting for my invitation to show up. I'm somewhere on that list.
Easy to say that, when you make it every year, J.J.
You know, like you can do, there's people out there that know that they're like, you know, 100,000th in line for the royal, for the English crown.
You need to get
if,
on
if
that.
You go through it. I feel like there's a Pro Bowl call-up for me somewhere out there.
I feel like you need to take this up with J.J. at some point, for sure.
J.J. would be, at some point, they might have to go to J.J. and like recently retired Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, all right, listen, nobody wants to do it. Can you at least show up? We know we'll get some clicks.
It's flag football. That'd be fun to have him out there running around. They should put a few legends out there in the flag football game. All right, that's number one. Number two, week eight against Indianapolis. For some reason, Shane Steichen thought that Anthony Richardson could engineer a touchdown towards the end of the half, or at least get some points on the board with like a minute to go, less than a minute to go in the half, deep in his own territory. Anthony Richardson, he of the well-documented on this show, sub 50% completion percentage.
It's a hell of a completion percentage.
Yes. This is what happened when they thought this would be a good idea, the Colts.
Richardson, empty backfield. He's in the gun. Here's the snap. Richardson looking, firing right side. It's picked off by Petrie. Petrie running across the 10 to his right, and he's stacked up inside the 8-yard line. Richardson coughs it up. Jalen Petrie with the INT. First and goal, Houston.
Yeah, and then the Texans would score. The Texans would tack on a touchdown there in a game that wound up 23-20.
The best part about that was just what a ridiculously stupid decision it was to throw that football. And Anthony Richardson, not to call the play, I believe it. You found out later that they were supposed to run, and Anthony Richardson checked into the
pass. He checked into that play. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I think Anthony Richardson. I think he thought he was going to freeze the safeties with his eyes by briefly staring down the middle of the field. But then he had enough time to where, like, he turned and took two gather steps. It, staring at exactly the coverage as it was and decided to throw that football.
Yeah, that...
Unbelievable.
That is
unbelievable.
That is 100% still on the coach, because you can point fingers and say, well, Anthony Richardson checked into that play. It's his fault. No, it's the coach's fault for putting the team in position where Anthony Richardson could check into anything. Like, you're running down the clock at that point. Get out of there. Get into the locker room at halftime. And they handed a touchdown to the Texans right there.
It wasn't anything like Richardson should have been blind to it or anything. It wasn't like Petrie popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The Texans didn't disguise their coverage or anything. He threw it to the ball. Right, he threw the ball to the receiver who was supposed to be covered by Jalen Petrie.
Yes.
And who was lurking right there.
Yeah. Excited to get Petrie back, man, next year. That's all I could think of when I'm listening to that highlight. Like, man, they could have used him out there in those playoff games. He was getting better and better in that role as the year went on, Jalen Petrie. All right, number three. This is against Dallas. This was a play that also involves Jalen Petrie, actually, because Derek Barnett forces a fumble. It gets scooped up by Tyler Guyton, an offensive lineman for the Cowboys. Well, I'll let Mark Vandermeer do the description here.
Second and six for Dallas from their 40. Cooper Rush with Dattle to his left. Bunch formation right after motion. Rush in trouble. Strip sack. Who's got it? It's still loose. Texans pick it up. Here's Barnett on the run. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Scoop, score, Derek Barnett.
Okay, so we've seen it before where guys force a fumble, scoop it up, and take it in for a touchdown. I've never seen a play where a guy forces a fumble, it gets scooped up by the Cowboys, Jalen Petrie comes in and waylays the guy.
Just crushes him.
And then
he crushes him.
And the guy fumbles it, Tyler Guyton, the O-lineman for the Cowboys, and the guy who forced the original fumble scoops it up and takes it in, Derek Barnett.
It's pretty embarrassing when you're an offensive lineman and you get destroyed like that by Jalen Petrie. Just comes up and a guy that weighs 100 pounds less than you just takes your soul.
Yep.
And then Derek Barnett, it was impressive athleticism by Derek Barnett twice on that play. The first, the strip sack, he had to reach in as he was running past. Just really beautiful hand-eye coordination, taps the ball out of the QB's hand. And then, yeah, Jalen Petrie just came in. I remember watching on the TV. It seemed like on the TV copy, like he appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like it was almost like he wasn't even in your peripheral.
Yep.
Like I would have excused Anthony Richardson for not seeing him. Mm-hmm. But no, he just rocketed in and just destroyed the dude.
It was a great play. And Barnett had another touchdown later in the season against the Titans, too. Very similar situations. Texans up by 10. Game's still a game at that point. And he takes it in and puts him up by 17. That happened in both games at about the same juncture in the game, too. It's really eerie. Derek Barnett scored those touchdowns under very similar circumstances. And also both against hated rivals of us here in Houston, the Cowboys and the Titans. Good job, Derek Barnett. Bring him back, Nick. He's a free agent. I want Derek Barnett on this team again next year. All right, last one. Derek Stingley Jr. has to be in this conversation somewhere. And there is a lot to choose from, especially from the halfway point of the season on. Derek Stingley Jr. was the best cornerback on the planet. You could take a couple of interceptions he had in the playoff game against the Chargers. There were other plays that he made throughout the season. This, to me, was in terms of importance at the time in the game, the importance of the game itself, because that was the Texans game coming out of the bye week and heading into a stretch where they were playing the Chiefs and the Ravens. They really needed to win this game considering what they had on the schedule. And it was a close game at the time, too. Here was Derek Stingley Jr., who had already intercepted one Tua Tagovailoa pass, sealing the deal.
Tua takes the snap. Tua with pressure, throwing downfield to his right, and intercepted. Stingley again! That's going to do it! The Texans are going to beat Miami. Stingley's second pick seals the deal.
Seals the deal. Great call.
And Houston will get its ninth win.
Great call. That's a chill-inducing call by Vandy right there. The other thing that made that great, Seth, two things. One, just the caliber of the catch, like the ball skills. Number two, it was against Tyreek Hill, who's one of the best receivers in football.
It was against Tyreek Hill, and it was great because you knew at that moment that Tyreek Hill was going to say something publicly or want to agitate his way out of Miami after that, because he had a half step on Stingley with a perfectly thrown ball. Tyreek Hill probably would have made the reception, but it wasn't supposed to be a back shoulder. Mm-mm. And yet it was.
Yeah.
And Derek Stingley came up and got it. At that moment, Tyreek Hill was thinking about, like, I got to get back to a different quarterback than this.
Oh, yeah.
This is not. So, and it wasn't, how long after the game was it where Tyreek Hill said he was probably gone?
That was after the season finale.
Oh, is that the end of the season?
Yeah,
right,
that was the end of the season. Right. Yeah, but
that was the moment where that was the moment where he knew, though.
He started thinking it.
To Tyreek Hill's credit, he didn't start trying to agitate out of the contract that he signed in September until after the
because
season.
He went 8-9.
Yes.
I missed the playoffs for the first time in my career. I'm out. And yeah, like, dude, you don't know how the salary cap works. There's no way you're out. Like, you just signed a new deal, man.
Mike McDaniel looked especially miserable after that play.
Yeah.
He's down, hands on his knees.
Yeah, man.
Disgusted, like he was puking at a frat party.
Well, he was probably, and that may have happened at some point. But yeah, he's probably starting to feel really good about Tua going into that game. Like, Tua had as good a stretch of football that he had played in his career coming into that game. The Dolphins, I think in the previous four games before that, they put up over 31 points in three of them. The only one they didn't was when they had to go up to Green Bay and play in frigid temperatures, which the Dolphins seem to get a pass for every time they go up there and suck in sub-zero weather.
People were getting ready to maybe talk about the Dolphins as an incredible comeback, just with escaping the cold claws of death.
Yep.
To actually be a playoff contender. That one just pretty much did it in for him.
Yep. Okay, so the four plays, I'll put this up on a poll during the break, and you can go vote on my Twitter timeline, at Sean T. Pendergast. The Danielle Hunter strip sack fumble against the New England Patriots, which is sort of repping everything Danielle did all season long. The Jalen Petrie interception right before the half against Anthony Richardson and the Colts in week 8. Derek Barnett touchdown, the first one, the scoop and score against the Cowboys, and then the Derek Stingley Jr. interception to close out the Miami game.
You know, the other nice thing about that Dolphins game was that the Texans picked off Tua Tagovailoa three times in that game. He had thrown one interception in his previous seven games.
Yeah.
Like, they were playing very careful. And even in that game, it was a ridiculous percentage of the throws were for 5 yards or less.
Yes.
It was just extreme dinking and dunking. And yet, whenever he tries to go deep and then you realize why he's only throwing 5 yards downfield for most of the game.
It's a great point.
Yeah, the Texans against quarterbacks who don't throw a lot of interceptions at NRG Stadium this year was something else. It wasn't just the number of picks. It was picks against quarterbacks who don't turn the ball over.
It was, go through it. Tua, you just hit Tua. Jared Goff, I don't know how many interceptions he had coming into the Week 10 game against the Lions. I guarantee it was less than five. He threw five in that game. Herbert in the playoffs had thrown three all regular season long, throws four in the playoffs. I would even throw Josh Allen in there, because Josh Allen in 2023, that was one of the things that kept him from being MVP level, was he was kind of careless with the football. And early on this season, through the first four games, he hadn't thrown any interceptions. He didn't throw any in that Texans game, but he should have thrown two. Like, Aziz Alshire had his hands on two balls in that game that should have been interceptions. So, you're exactly right, man. That home field advantage that the defense has at NRG Stadium reestablished is really, really nice.
It was Goff had thrown four interceptions in eight games heading into that Texans game. Remember, Goff was coming out of that stretch. It was a five-game stretch, I think, that no other quarterback had ever been as efficient and as good. Hadn't thrown a single interception in that five games. It was a ridiculous stretch of efficient play.
It was a stretch. It was a stretch where a lot of the stats you saw, Seth, where he's thrown more touchdowns than incompletions, like stuff like that, crazy stuff, like crazy, crazy. People weighing in on our CJ Stroud contract talk discussion from the previous segment. CJ was hanging out too much with Micah Parsons last year, too much talking. I hope he doesn't do that anymore. That'll be interesting. I think that'll be one of the more interesting wrinkles this offseason, is just how visible is CJ Stroud? Is he doing a lot of stuff like that?
Of all the people I want my child to hang out with, I don't know if Micah Parsons is one of them. Not because he's
a bad person,
but he's a distraction. Yes. I feel like Micah's the classic. Like, okay, he's not a bad kid, but he's also not the kid that you feel is the best influence on your son.
Did you have a friend that wasn't a bad kid, but he was always the friend that you got into trouble with when you went
Sean
out?
Sanderson.
Yeah, mine's Jay Forcellina. You met Jay, actually. He was my friend who was... came in town, and he came up here on a Monday when we were doing the show.
Yeah, he tried to get me to go do blow with him in the bathroom.
I told you, I warned you. I said, don't go, and you went, and it was the dumbest thing I think you've ever done.
No, he didn't at all. No. He was here with his son, a teenage son. So if he's listening right now, Jay, I'll let your son know that, that was a complete fabrication by me.
That's right. So Micah Parsons is Jay Forcellina, and who? Scott Sanderson?
Sean Sanderson.
Sean Sanderson. Okay. How did he spell it? Sean.
Oh, S-E-A-N.
Good. Okay. I like him. Not as much as Farragher, but I like him. Let's see. Glad CJ is more locked in, but I hope CJ still finds time to have fun and relax this offseason. He played a tough season where his OC and O-line didn't do him a lot of favors.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the new offensive coordinator, man, let's see. What's your over-under on when they actually make a hire?
That's a great question. I think
Wednesday of next week?
Yeah, I'll go under. Okay. Wednesday of next week. That's a good number, though.
I think they're having conversations at the Senior Bowl.
Yep.
And they probably got – I would guess there's – like informal interviews going on with hypothetically Chip Kelly. There's nothing of substance that has linked the Texans to Chip Kelly right now. I just feel guilty even talking about it as much. But Chip Kelly, they could just have conversations. D'Amico knows him. It doesn't have to be a formal interview. So I think there's a lot of that going on. A lot of casual/formal conversations, but aren't interviews per se.
Wednesday, that's a good target. Wednesday of next week.
They might already have the guy, like hypothetically, let's say it was Chip Kelly or Mike McCarthy. Hypothetically, there could already be an offer on the table, and those guys are just waiting to see if they get a head coaching opportunity or something different.
Yep.
And so the Texans might be getting their ducks in a row for if it's not one of their you know, top three chosen candidates.
Yeah, these could all be Plan B guys that we're talking to right now. It's a great point. All right, speaking of Nick and D'Amico, they're at the Senior Bowl. What's going on down there? What do we want them to be shopping for at the Senior Bowl? In where do you go shopping in Mobile, Alabama? You go shopping at the Senior Bowl. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Just looking at a video during the break of Brian Callahan, the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. He's at the Senior Bowl, as are most all of the current head coaches in the NFL and GMs and whatnot. He did an interview with somebody, and it's a cut from that interview that Will Levis is going to go spend a couple months under the watchful eye of Jordan Palmer, noted quarterback guru and brother of Carson Palmer.
Oh,
that should fix things. I'm sure he'll be fine
well,
now.
Well, Jordan Palmer is the one that Josh Allen worked with, right? Or works with. They use a lot of the pitch tracking technology and everything. And one thing they've realized in the NFL over the past decade is they used to think, well, you're either born with accuracy or you're not.
It's really hard
to improve quarterback's accuracy. But Dak Prescott and Josh Allen are a couple of the more notable examples of guys who actually improved their accuracy through just refining their technique. So it's a lot. The quarterback instruction is a lot less cavemanish than it used to be.
Yeah.
There you go. Throw that football over that thar mountain. That's right. What they used to say. I used to hear that all the time from the quarterback coach.
That was the coaching, huh?
Can you throw it over that thar mountain or not?
So Nick and D'Amico are at the Super Bowl. With
Senior Bowl.
Did I say Super Bowl? Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Boy, Freudian slip. Someday they'll be at the Super Bowl participating, we hope.
Early, apparently, yeah.
Senior Bowl, yeah.
If they were there right now.
just getting ready.
Waiting for everybody to come.
That's right. On Wednesday before Radio Row. The Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. So what are you hoping that they're shopping for there, Seth, at the Senior Bowl?
Wide receiver.
Yep.
Interior defensive lineman, because I think you can. There's always room for an upgrade there, even though those guys played well.
Yep.
I think there's if you get a slam dunk stud guy that's out there all three downs, that type of guy, that can make that defense even better. Now that's also personally motivated. The offense is the side of the ball we're most concerned about.
Yeah.
So I would say wide receiver, interior offensive line, and guard. A running back or fullback of some variety.
Ooh, a fullback, huh?
Yeah. The fullback's not going to go in the first couple of rounds.
Yeah.
But the Senior Bowl and also some of the smaller college guys, you can find your diamonds in the rough.
Okay.
I know Andrew Beck came in and did a good job against the Chiefs, but he's still kind of that converted tight end / fullback type.
Yeah.
So I bet that's one that it's not going to be a marquee signing, maybe not even a draft pick, but maybe they see somebody at the Senior Bowl that was a college running back, but like, I don't know, this guy might be a good fullback.
That would 1,000% break the tendencies that Nick Caserio has had that predate D'Amico Ryans. Has he drafted a single small school guy since he's gotten here that you can
As opposed to when he was with the Patriots.
Yeah, where they did it all the time.
The Patriots drafted small schools. There were times where their top two picks in the draft were not even like Division I A guys.
Right.
They love their small school guys. Yeah, that would be a tendency buster. Now, Nick, when we asked him about that, he laughed it off. He acted like I was a moron for even bringing it up. You know, the way Nick does that with me sometimes. And I am all right. I can take it. But there's something to it. There have been way too many Power Five. Tank Dell is the only one who wasn't a Power Five guy. And just by the skin of his teeth, because U of H became a Power Five after
Tank
Dell left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at it now. Davis Mills, Nico Collins, Brevin Jordan, Garrett. Well, yeah. Like, it's all Power Five. And once D'Amico got in the building, I don't even need to read the names.
Became heavily SEC?
Well, it became heavily, like, not just Power 5, but the powerful Power 5. Like, the first draft with D'Amico here, Ohio State, Alabama, Penn State, Houston, TCU, Alabama, Notre Dame, Iowa State, Pitt. And so those last couple, that's Xavier Hutchinson and Brandon Hill. And then last year, Georgia, Notre Dame, USC, Ohio State, Oregon, Louisville, USC, Auburn and Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think with Nick, what I suspect, because he plays it pretty close to the vest when you start asking him about, you know, his strategies and what have you.
Yeah.
with Nick, like most people who have been in personnel for a long, long time, they know that ultimately it's always a crapshoot. And it's easy to claim that you always knew a guy was going to be great after he's great and you drafted him. But they know that there's a real good chance that any one of your draft picks is not going to work out. Yep. That's just the way it works. And if you go back to drafting Derek Stingley versus Sauce Gardner, one of the things they really liked about him was not just that they had tape of him versus SEC wide receivers. They just had more tape of him versus really good wide receivers. They also had practice tape of him versus Jamar Chase and Jefferson. Like, they had
who are the two first team all pro wide receivers this year.
So it comes down to sample size. You've just got more to go off of, because I know as a fan, I sit there a lot of times and say, well, especially we do this with players from University of Houston, well, yeah, but look at what he did against this school, or look at what he did against that school. And it's cool, and it shows that they can do it, but it's still only a little glimpse. You didn't get to see them play against guys that good all the time. And I think with Nick, there was probably a big difference between him and Belichick in this regard.
Yeah.
Belichick obviously was going to win out in those arguments, but it seems like with Nick, he really values being able to have as many reps to watch against really good competition as possible.
Yeah, what am I watching? How much of a reasonable facsimile of what this guy's going to go against on Sundays am I watching right now, you know?
And I think when it comes time to take a flyer on guys, he probably looks at either late in the draft or the rookie free agents, like the two twins, the receivers there from last
Yankees,
year.
The Janky twins. Yeah.
So, like, okay, you take those guys as rookie free agents, but for our really valuable draft picks, I want as much film and data on these guys as possible.
Yes, yes. I want as high a probability as you can feel like you have when evaluating these guys. Last year we were good with Gerard Johnson potentially being our new OC. What do you think changed this year? Would you be upset if he's the guy? I think it's pretty simple. If I can speak for the people that don't want Gerard Johnson, I don't think those people dislike Gerard Johnson. And I'll speak for myself. I would rather they not hire somebody internally for this OC job. I'd rather it be somebody with a new vision for this team, new fingerprints, most importantly, with some experience calling plays. That's it
right.
for me.
I mean, it's as simple as, I think that anybody who asks that question knows what the answer is. It's that, all right, if they had gone 2 years, and for one, don't lump everybody in. Right. I wasn't eager for Gerard Johnson to be the offensive coordinator last year.
Last year.
So
yeah.
If your question is, for the people who wanted Gerard Johnson last year, why would they not want him this year? It's because I think they would have been assuming, all right, then you're just going to continue on with what you were able to do. I felt like Gerard just did not simply have enough NFL experience coaching to step in with a young quarterback and a defensive-minded head coach for that to be his first time. If it were a situation like with Matt Nagy or with Eric Bieniemy or anybody else up in Kansas City, that's a different deal. Mm-hmm. But because they have an offensive-minded head coach who's running the show.
Yep.
So I personally wasn't eager for Gerard Johnson last year. This year especially, people got a reality check and realized, oh, okay, it's not simply taking over this system the way it was run and that he's got experience with it. We need to get somebody, at least personally, I feel like I want somebody that's got some experience, not just calling plays, but also coaching other positions in the offense, all of that, like a more well-rounded background and upbringing in the league.
Do any of the names, there's been four names made public so far that are in for this job.
Yeah.
Gerard's one of them. The other three are Jeff Nixon, the Syracuse OC, Thad Lewis, the quarterbacks coach for the Buccaneers, and Nick Cayley is getting interviewed tomorrow. Yeah. He's the passing game coordinator, and he's had many roles. Both he's with the Rams now, but he's with the Patriots for a number of years. Do any of them excite you so far? Are there any that you would get excited about?
No, and I also don't get distraught about that just because there have been plenty of really good offensive coordinators who don't have huge experience and they knock it out of the park.
Right.
So personally, I want somebody more experienced, but I'm not gonna claim that the house is burning down if they do take somebody that's got a little bit more limited experience or hasn't called plays. But I do hope that those guys have a good chunk of experience overall. Like with Cayley, there's always that part where you get to like, all right, well, he was with the Patriots from 2015 to 2022. Then he goes to the Rams. last year was the first time that anybody made him any kind of a coordinator at all, passing game coordinator or anything. And I start to wonder, like, all right, he's not the boy genius that Sean McVay was. What kept him from maybe getting opportunities earlier? Yeah. So that's where my skepticism is.
Sure.
But I also, there is a huge crapshoot element to it if you're not going with one of the guys who's a staff. You bring Wade Phillips in as a defensive coordinator. And look, you could argue about just how good he is. He's a really good defensive coordinator. Yeah. And typically with Wade Phillips, his track record is the first couple years he's there, his defenses are incredible. And then can he sustain it? That's the bigger question mark. But you feel very comfortable in that. I don't feel that way about any of the guys that have been interviewed so far or that are slated to be interviewed.
It's a little like a version of what you and I were just talking about with drafting habits. It's almost like these guys that they've interviewed so far are the equivalent of like group of five or small school guys where you don't really, you've got no film on what they're all about as a play caller. I mean, you have some on Jeff Nixon, but it's not been at the level. It's not been going against some of the defensive minds you're going to be going against hardcore in the NFL, whereas Chip Kelly is the equivalent of like the blue chip defensive ends that they're watching down at the Senior Bowl. Like you know what that looks like.
My argument, almost as I'm thinking about it, my argument might for hiring an offensive minded head coach might be less about the quarterback and more about, well, yeah, it's also a lot easier to find a defensive coordinator who's not going to get another chance at being a head coach.
Yeah.
But is a really good defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Like a Dick LeBeau or a Wade Phillips or somebody
or
like that.
Or Steve Spagnuolo in Kansas City.
Right. Spagnuolo's probably not going to get another chance.
Yeah.
He's just going to stay there and just keep
The best thing that could happen to the NFL is for somebody to hire that guy as their head coach.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, so you've got your, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, it was really cool. Something happened. I got some explanation of benefits for something medically. And I'm like, man, the football players, you guys get that annual checkup that you get with the league?
I get a health, like a brain and heart scan.
Yeah, you
scan.
Get like the full Monty on that thing.
Yeah, but you got to go do it at only one select location. So it's free and it's cool, except you might have to travel to the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah.
But they do it at the Super Bowl. So on Wednesday, I'm going to go do it at noon. My only concern is I haven't gotten the details yet.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to be fasting. I don't know if I'm going to supposed to be fasting.
I might get hungry, Seth, for a show.
Yeah, which usually is a... Look, I dabble in the intermittent fasting, but I got to be really careful about it when I do it and also do a radio show. Circumstances have to be just right, and Radio Row is not the best circumstance. Like, if I'm gonna fast for a while, I've got to be really well rested without a lot of other distractions and everything.
Yeah,
I'm just warning you in advance that Wednesday morning might get hairy if I'm fasting in that moment.
You're warning me, and yet I feel like the audience is like rubbing their hands together, like, oh,
you're gonna get me flipping out at you over some
triggered
harmless
Seth.
Thing. Don't put words in my mouth, Sean.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's good, man. Though that's cool that they do that. Where in New Orleans are they doing it?
Tulane is doing it, but I think it's in Metairie.
Okay, that's where the Saints' practice facility is. That would stand to reason. I wonder if they're doing it somewhere
like
there
at the facility or something.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll interview for the job.
It's still
the
open.
Coaching job.
It's still.
I'll bring in waving my good lipid numbers and be like, look at this. I'll be here for the duration.
There's most job openings for anything out there, like in coaching. I don't want you to leave to go get, but if you could get a head coaching job, I would give you that my blessing. Anything else, I need you to stay.
One of my stipulations would be that I could continue to do my Houston sports radio show.
You could Gottlieb the whole thing? He's doing that.
I would negotiate with Odyssey to turn it into a three-hour show because, I've only got so many hours in the day.
Sure.
The other 21 hours of the day, I'll be the coach of the Saints.
Well, and like every other coach out there, you'll remind us. Not every coach. D'Amico doesn't do this, but like many coaches out there, one noted former coach of the Texans, you'll remind us that those 21 hours you are
I'm working the entire time
coaching and
I haven't slept in seven
coaching.
Days. That's how you know I'm good. Yeah.
I was hoping they do this this screening thing like out on Radio Row. There'd be like a kiosk over there. You could watch all you guys get your checkups and your brain scans and everything.
Hey, remember we did that thing with Ross where we used artificial intelligence to come up with reasons where he should be the Texans offensive line coach?
Yeah.
And it was pretty impressive.
It was good.
I did that for the Dallas Cowboys job while that was still open. And in the first the first time in history, I think, in the history of artificial intelligence, it spit out an accurate sports response. Because it sucks for sports. Usually you ask a sports-related question and it gets the stats all wrong and everything. It came back, and I was expecting it, and it was working, it was working, it was working. I was like, oh, you know, you could see that it was working on the project. I'm like, oh, it's taking a couple minutes. This is probably going to be pretty good. The simple response was, I can't find any evidence that Seth Payne should be the next head coach of the Cowboys.
And it was thinking that, at least it thought for a long time about it. Like, at least it seemed
because it was digging for something, anything.
That's true.
Anything at all.
No way.
And it didn't come up with a single damn thing.
Dude, you should
nothing.
You should put my name in and see what it comes up with. That'd be hilarious.
Probably, if it comes up with anything at all, I'm going to be very, very insulted. Yes.
I've actually been in management positions before with companies. You know, that might be, you know, that...
If Jerry had wanted to go outside of his comfort zone, he should have hired co-head coaches Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast. Yeah, hell yeah. That would have been way outside.
Can you imagine all the dirt that Cowboys fans would have gone through the archives on our on the Odyssey website finding stuff we've said about Dallas in the past? Yeah.
That's all right. That's all right. It's nothing that's probably hadn't happened with coaches up there before. It's all good.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to win a trip to Vegas? It could be yours. How? By tuning into Sports Radio 610. For an hour a day on the Odyssey app, live, rewind, show, podcast, doesn't matter. As long as you're hanging out in the app, listening to us for at least an hour, we prefer it be more, but you will qualify. Your daily entry, either Sports Radio 610 or any of our participating sister stations, your daily entry for you to get into a contest to head to Vegas for the college basketball tournament in March. You and three friends could be wheels up to Vegas in March, each with an extra $5,000 in your pocket to have some fun out there for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. Just log in and listen now on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. Up next, speaking of Vegas, the odds makers, they did not listen to my warning yesterday. We will tell you what that is coming up next.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of bodies on Van Vliet. Green to Thompson.
Hot potato.
Oh, how about that to Shingoon? The Rockets just beat the Hawks in their full court press. They do it again.
Oh, goodness.
Look at this. Look by Hunter to give them the lead. Just did miss it. And then the Hawks were pressuring the ball. The Rockets played keep away. Shingoon then with the dunk. And they win it 100-96. An ugly win is still a win.
High energy Craig Ackerman there, man. I love Ryan Hollins going, oh, goodness. That was good. I like that. Rockets win last night 100-96. I warned the odds makers. I warned you guys.
You guys did.
Putting the odds out there, I said, keep the Rockets' name out of your mouth or your keyboard or whatever it is you use to put these odds out when it comes to Jimmy Butler being a Houston Rocket. Reportedly, the Miami Heat have lowered the price on a Jimmy Butler trade. The favorite right now to land Jimmy Butler is the Phoenix Suns at -150. The trade deadline is in a week. It's February 6th, which is next Thursday, so it's a week from tomorrow. Phoenix Suns -150. The Rockets are way down the list. They're at 20-1, tied with the Lakers, tied with the Grizzlies. It's interesting, Seth, the teams that are in the mix for Jimmy Butler feel like teams that have veteran cores that have experienced recent success, but they're not as successful as they're used to being right now, like the Phoenix Suns, the Golden State Warriors, and the Milwaukee Bucks, where, like, picking up Jimmy Butler, I don't want to say it's a Hail Mary or anything like that, but these are teams that are not used, they're not in the standings where they're used to being right now. The Suns, the Warriors, they've all got veteran cores too that probably understand. I don't know that anybody understands how Jimmy Butler is conducting himself right now, but the way he's conducting himself has less of a chance of toxicity with a bunch of vets, you know, like Durant and the crew with the Suns, and obviously Steph and Draymond with the Warriors, with the Bucks, it would seem like if he goes to one of those places, he'll fall much more in line than he is with the Heat right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's disgruntled. I think NBA teams worry less and less these days about whether a guy's going to carry his disgruntlement over. I wasn't the only one, but I felt like there weren't enough people just screaming at the top of their lungs. Like, there's no way in hell these three guys are going to stay together. That James,
a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, that those guys, when Harden went and teamed up, that those three guys were going to be comfortable and happy on the same team for multiple years.
Yeah, Harden, Kyrie, and Durant, yeah.
But, and it is, you're right, though. The trade deadline used to be, like, late March. And then a few years ago, they moved it up to...
It's always been in February, but much later in February,
Late February,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
But it's been slowly creeping up. It was the 2 years ago, it was the 10th, then it was the 8th, and now this year it's what?
It's the 6th. It's next Thursday. Yeah. It's creeping up. Most fans want it to be later. You know, it gives your team more of an opportunity. You know, like it's... Yeah. You know, you're halfway through the season. You could argue some of these teams might not know who they are at this point. But Jimmy Butler, 20-1. So I'm not worried. Here's the thing, and I'm being somewhat tongue-in-cheek. I don't think Jimmy Butler is coming here. I don't think even Jimmy Butler on his best behavior would be coming here at this point because of what this team seems to be evolving into. My level of trust is very high with Raphael Stone right now. It's hard to find moves that he's made in the last couple of years where you're like, oh, they really screwed. Like early on, it was like, okay, this Kevin Porter Jr. thing, we don't need this anymore. You know what I mean? Like there were moves that were made early on when he was made GM, but that was just a bad basketball team too. You know, like there was nothing good going on the court with the team. You know, the Steven Silas hire feels in retrospect like a combination of David Culley and Lovie Smith. Like, okay, it's, you know, he's going to be... He wasn't brought in to be a placeholder. He was brought in to coach Russell Westbrook and James Harden. But once they both split, it's like, okay, well, probably not the right guy to coach a bunch of young dudes. But who cares right now? We're actually trying to be bad right now.
Silas, I mean, well, with Silas, I could see where the argument in favor of him coaching a bunch of young dudes is that, okay, he's got a softer touch. Maybe he'll be more patient, whatever it might be. It just... It turned out that was not the right theory at the time.
Well, yeah, this team needed Ime Udoka.
Yeah,
they needed that management style. So, but I have high trust. I'm just thinking of the three GMs across the city right now: Dana Brown, Nick Caserio, Raphael Stone. This is as high probably collectively as I've had in GMship across those three teams. You know, like collectively.
Yeah.
In a while. Like, I think Dana Brown, like, he was not handed the same thing James Click was. You know, Jeff Luhnow is the greatest GM in the history of this city. So he's, but as far as like inheriting, like, Dana Brown did not inherit an ideal situation. He inherited a team that was starting to feel the effects of the punishment from the sign stealing and had Jose Abreu on this team.
Honestly, if I were to put myself in the shoes of those guys and in accepting the job, Dana Brown had the one that was going to be probably the most thankless no matter what happened.
That's a great take.
I mean, you know, look at what happened to his predecessor. James Click won a World Series and got fired within a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because they were already great, and it's a matter of, okay, how do you sustain this? Dana Brown takes the job over when they're even further down the line in terms of the difficulty of maintaining that high standard. I don't want to say it's harder to do. It's always hard to be a GM no matter what. But those other two guys get the benefit of the doubt of taking over a team that's in shambles in a lot of ways. And it's just, there's going to be clear obstacles in their path. Where with Dana Brown, people just want you to keep extending the greatness, and it's hard to do.
That is hard to do, and I would add to that, you're walking into a front office that has Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson in it at the time, that were very, very influential voices with Jim Crane, the owner.
Yeah.
That's a tough dynamic.
That's a really tough dynamic.
So... I trust all three of them right now. I'd have to go back through in my head. Maybe that'll be my project for later on today. Is like,
which one you trust the least?
Well, no. But is this the highest collective trust level in the GM position across the Astros, Rockets, and Texans that we've had? I don't know how you quantify that. It's totally subjective. Yeah. But because we went, you know, we went through a period. The Texans went very up and down with Rick Smith for a while, and then there was really no GM for like 2 or 3 years, you know. And then so it's hard to find, you know. And then like before Jeff Luhnow got there, it was Ed Wade and Tim Papura, you know. And then with the Rockets, I feel like there was a pretty high trust level in Daryl Morey throughout. They just never got over the hump. But I all three guys right now, man. Like they each team has things they need to address. And I trust each of the three GMs that with the resources they have, they're going to address. I think Dana Brown's had a good offseason given what he's been asked to do. You know,
yeah. The thing about, I guess, Raphael Stone was that he would be most under the gun, too, because it felt like for him, or like an argument for why he was the most under the gun was, it felt like with him, oh, it's an in-house hire. And it's a team that's just kind of gotten caught on its heels and staggering because James Harden and Russell Westbrook decided to basically just dismantle the whole deal. So the Rockets did the easy thing. They did the comfortable thing.
Yeah.
And especially if you look at Daryl Morey's previous protege, Sam Hinkie, when he'd gone off to do whatever the hell he did with the Sixers, the process,
yeah,
it didn't work out so hot.
Yep.
That it felt like the it was just a placeholder almost.
Yep.
So like Raphael Stone had to, I think really against the odds really proved that no, he could do it on his own merits. He wasn't just the easy in-house hire.
Yeah, there was a lot of he's not a basketball guy out there. Like I think he's an attorney if I'm not mistaken. Like I think he's got a law degree. You know what I mean? And Daryl Morey.
Wasn't a basketball guy either.
He wasn't a traditional basketball guy. I mean, like, you know, like he liked basketball, but he was steeped way more in consulting and analytics than he was hoops.
Well, same as Jeff Luhnow.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Jeff Luhnow was, especially when they hired him with the Cardinals, people were like, what the hell is this? All guy right. came out of women's retail.
No, I've actually, like, Daryl at least, I think, played basketball at one point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I watched him play in those Rockets media tournaments, you know, like, oh, he knows how to shoot a free throw. Like, Jeff Luhnow, I don't know if he ever picked up a bat, you know, but he was really good
at what
he did.
The dynamic about Jeff Luhnow that always fascinated me was that he grew up in Mexico City and had such a deft touch with Latin players, like acquiring Latin players. I don't know about interpersonally, but just as far, I feel like he was, I think he was maybe able to see through some of the, either the bias or like the filters that people that just grew up and lived in America, like he was able to see through some of that in a different way, perhaps, than people had that had more of a traditional upbringing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, different set of eyes looking at it for sure. Seth, what are the coaches? Text message. Seth, what are the coaches doing when they don't sleep for days? What do they expect to find watching film for the 40th time that wasn't observed the first 20 views? Real question. Yeah. Thank you. Russ on the road, P1 listener.
I think a lot of it is it's like you're scouring every corner and you're trying to find, for one, when you're watching the opponent, there's so many things. When you're watching the opponent, so many things that you're trying to figure out what has caused them problems before. How did they adjust to it? What was their answer for it? Is there a way that we can take advantage of that? On the offensive side of the ball especially, the offensive coaches tend to be more of the heavy coffee consumers, I think, than the defensive coaches. It's a lot of that. I think the same thing any high school or college coach is doing, which is that there's so many, in football especially, there's just so many different possibilities. And you're trying to narrow it down to what your best options are and call your playbook down. That the obsession is, it's driven by a very real thing in that there's opportunities everywhere and you got to figure out what your best chances are. What they've realized, you know, over the years, especially in the last 10 years or so, is, oh yeah, being chronically sleep deprived is a horrible way to be in a decision-making position.
Yes.
And I always felt, because I could see it. You see it firsthand how dumb the coaches get over the course of a season or even during training camp when the hours used to be longer. You would actually watch your coach, your position coach, get dumber. He would say left when he meant right.
Yeah.
He'd be screaming about stuff that didn't make any sense for him to be screaming about. They were just dumber, which is what happens when you're chronically sleep deprived. They've gotten better at it, and it really comes down to they realize, like, all right, I'm not going to be functioning at my best if I'm operating on 3 hours of sleep every night.
Yeah.
So I got to force myself to get my sleep and everything. But it's still, it's especially in the NFL more so than in college.
Yeah.
It's part of it's just, it's kind of a culture, like a, it's part of the culture and it's part of the expectation. It's almost like writers sometimes feel like, oh, I guess I need to be an alcoholic because that's what the great writers do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And it almost becomes an expectation that's driven by the culture of coaching more so than what's the actual smart thing to do. And they've gotten better about it. I think they still work really long days, but they try to remember that, okay, it doesn't matter how much I work. If I'm an idiot by the end of the week, I'm not helping anybody.
I love that.
I appreciate you acknowledging my personal game plan to become a great writer, Seth, and publicizing it. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Fly-By Yingling helping
Dude, we got Oh, my truck looks like an alcoholic truck right now.
I hope none of those are open, by the way.
Which part?
You will be in the slammer.
Nothing's it's all in boxes.
Very good.
Yeah, it's all stacked in boxes.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, there were 20 and then my son showed up. He took his part.
Took one down, passed it around.
Yeah, he took a few.
By the way, I love what Seth just said. I was just nodding my head the whole time.
About sleep and coaches and everything.
About coaches and the film study and the long hours and the in first, out last. That's just paranoia to me.
Yeah, that's what I think it's just paranoia. Obsession was my first word that came
I think they're paranoid that if I don't do this, then
somebody
I'm not a good coach
or someone else is getting
they're going to get fired or someone else is getting the promotion.
Right. Well, and that's the problem. It's like the old saying, like, basically, when you're going, if an offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator are scheming against each other on a play, whoever holds the chalk last wins, because there's always an answer.
Yeah.
So, like, no matter how good your game plan is, there's stuff out there that could devastate your game plan. And I think it's that. It's paranoia, not just of all that, the pressure you're under for your job and everything. It's just that there's no perfect game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be the hardest thing in the world, to just be like, okay, I'm going to go to bed, and knowing that I haven't really examined all the different ways that I could get fired on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard. That takes a lot of discipline.
Steve Spurrier seemed to be okay with everything. I'm like, I'm going to go golf.
That's the irrational confidence part of it.
Right.
Well, but that's also the college part of it, where a lot of guys that got credit for being offensive geniuses were like, no, they were geniuses at getting the five best
the
wide
recruiting,
receivers in the country.
Oh, for sure.
Having Danny Werfel throw the ball to
him. Just lob it to a space and let him run underneath it. Yeah, for sure. Hey, by the way, all that beer in the back of my truck is Fly-By Yingling, who we thank for sending us to Radio Row. We'll be there a week from, we'll be there Sunday night. Looking forward to that. We'll be there all week long next week. Gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Thank you.
Okay.
We will
get out of here. We will let In the Loop do their thing for the next 4 hours. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and hopefully a productive sleepless night to you.
Thank
for the rest of your life.
Yes. Lots of alcohol so I can become a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yes.
All right. We're done. We are out of time. You're listening to KLT FM HD2 Houston, an Odyssey sports station.